smell.
And we are joined by newly sworn in Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger, the Democrat who won election in November to represent the 7th District right here, the big swath through Central Virginia. And Congresswoman Spanberger, thank you so much for being on the air. How's the first couple of weeks been?
Oh, thank you for having me. The first couple of weeks have been good. I was sworn in last Thursday, so it's been a week now.
Okay.
But prior to that, we were doing a lot of work getting our offices up and running. Mm-hmm. We got the keys on January 2nd and moved in on January 3rd. So we've been kind of going at a breakneck pace, trying to get things up and running, make sure we're there for constituent services, for anyone contacting the office. And we have had quite a few people contacting the office. So it's been busy, but it's been good.
And where did you get a good office? I know that's kind of an inside baseball question, but
we did get a good office. The inside baseball part of it is there's a lottery. Yeah. You pick a number, and then based on the number, you get to choose your office. And out of more than 80 numbers, I chose, I think it was 89 total, I chose number 11. So we did get a
you
pretty
did
good
well.
Office.
Okay.
With that. Yes.
Great. Listen, I saw the picture of your swearing in, and Speaker Pelosi was there for that, right?
Yes. Yeah, so
but you didn't vote for her. Was that awkward?
You know, it's that's right. I did not vote for her. It was certainly interesting. I mean, I knew going into it that I wasn't voting for her. I knew going into it that we were going to have that moment. You know, I was very clear for months and months and months that I wasn't going to vote for her. So there was no real surprise there. I hope it certainly wasn't awkward for me, but I think it made it a little more interesting perhaps than everyone else's experience.
Yeah. Well, tell me, I remember that was a campaign promise, to try to reset everything within the Democrat caucus if the Democrats were to take control of the House, which they did and which you're now a part of. How did that all go down, or what can you share with us about the conversations that you had as Congresswoman Pelosi tried to regain the gavel, which she ultimately did?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I was steadfast in what it is that I talked about along the campaign trail, because, you know, while it's something that I authentically believe, and that's why I promised along the campaign trail, which is, you know, I think that there's a lot of dysfunction in Washington. I think we've seen heightened levels of partisanship. And I think at some points in time, sometimes in order to change the conversation, you need to change the people who are leading that conversation. And that was really the kind of fundamental reason that I thought it was important to have new leadership, and certainly on the Republican side, because of Paul Ryan's departure within the House, at least they have new leadership, a new majority leader, minority leader. And so I thought that was important on both sides. I am very excited about the fact that we do have a lot of newer members who are newer to leadership within the Democratic caucus. So ideally, some of their voices and ideas will be part of the major conversation about where the Democratic Party is going, how we work with the Republican Party, what we prioritize, and how we get things done for the American people.
Yeah, the speaker was sure lampooned this week with the way she presented herself in the response to the president's remarks. What were your thoughts both about what the president had to say and about how the optics, I guess, of what Speaker Pelosi did following that speech?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, my impression of what's happening, my perception is through the lens of two things. One, I'm a former federal employee. So for me, being at a place and time where it's almost become accepted that we can use shutdowns and federal employees as bargaining chips, to me, I just find that totally inappropriate. So any theatrics surrounding a shutdown, for me, I find unacceptable, because at the end of the day, there are hardworking Americans who work as public servants who are now in the middle of a fight. And no matter what we're fighting about, I think that's inappropriate in every single case. So there's that piece of it. Mm-hmm. And then because in this case, we are fighting about security, how to achieve security. You know, my background, I'm a former CIA officer. I work narcotics trafficking cases and used to track drug cartels in Mexico and how they would bring drugs into the U.S. So I have a particular interest in border security. I have a particular area of expertise in a number of these things. So, you know, it's my perception of the president's talk and then the response is, in fact, very much impacted by the fact that I think it's unacceptable that we're facing a shutdown over any discussion point. And then, you know, really, as it comes to border security, I think we need to have really good conversations, and making something like security a political issue, I think, is wrong, because that's not how you achieve security. We have real threats. We have, you know, drugs coming over the border. We have a real need to know who's coming into our country and who's leaving our country. But what is missing from this conversation is how do we best achieve that security? And I think, you know, and this is an example of where on either side, people are dug in on a position. But what we're not asking is, you know, what is the goal? I think everyone from both sides of the aisle would say, yes, we want this country to be safe and we want this country to be secure. So we need to ask that question. Is that a common value? And the answer better be yes. And then from there, well, how do we best achieve that? Because I think that boiling this down to a political discussion, as opposed to let's create a real strategy that's something that we can act on. That's something that is, you know, recognizing that, you know, even let's look at, you know, drug trafficking across the southern border. Mm-hmm. The majority of drugs that enter this country enter through ports of entry. So when we're talking about how to best conduct those interdictions, we also need to make sure that we have appropriate staffing and appropriate technological infrastructure at our ports of entry to allow us to make those interdictions and further interdictions. When we're looking at how some of it has crossed the border, you know, from the 1990 to 2016, we found American law enforcement found 224 tunnels at points across the border. So, you know, we need to make sure that we're investing in sensors that can help find tunnels that are being built. And, you know, this isn't nothing that I'm saying is new, but it's notably absent from the conversation that we're seeing at the central parts of the party. And, you know, I will compliment a Democratic colleague and Pete Aguilar and Will Hurd, who's a Republican colleague. Last Congress, they did a lot of work together, bipartisan bill, working on border security, notably Will Hurd. The Republican is also a former CIA officer. He worked overseas, as I did. And I think that, you know, the work that they put together and the bill that they proposed that ultimately didn't get out of committee is a real great example for where we, as the 116th Congress, should be looking to try and have a real strong conversation about what are the threats and how do we actually, with technology, with personnel power, address those real threats.
Well, it sounds like you're kind of agreeing with President Trump that there's a crisis of sorts. Is your disagreement the solution that he's offering? You're just against the wall? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the only crisis is the fact that we have hundreds of thousands of federal employees tasked with keeping our country safe, our CBP officers, our TSA agents who make sure that, you know, they know who's getting on planes and who's getting off planes. Our FBI agents who are tasked with investigating terrorism cases, both at home and internationally, our State Department officers, our diplomats overseas who are, you know, reporting good information back to our policymakers. The fact that all of these individuals are either at home or working without pay, that to me is the crisis.
Okay.
And in terms of where I agree, you know, the numbers show, the data does show that the number of interdictions of or apprehensions of people along the border, it's actually down significantly. You know, back in 2000, it was 1.6 million people were apprehended. In 2018, it's about 400,000 people. So there is a significant shift to what we're seeing. Still a lot of folks. And here's my point. As a former national security person, any threat is a threat, no matter how big, no matter how small. And so where I'm happy to have the conversation with my colleagues, be they on the Republican side or on the Democratic side or somewhere in the middle, what is the real threat? Because drugs coming across the border, given my background, that I perceive as a threat.
Right.
Someone who might come into this country seeking to do harm, that is a threat. And so I agree that we need to always, at you know, and it, be it at the southern border, the northern border, because we have apprehended would-be terrorists at the northern border, which is notable, or at ports of entry where people are flying in from overseas and landing in New York, landing in Washington, D.C. We need to make sure that we have the proper personnel, the proper training, the proper infrastructure that will allow us to know who's coming and going and be able to track. And really, part of this is we need to be able to give ourselves the agility or the ability to be dynamic in how we adjust and change.
Right.
Because one of the things I know from my background is, you know, you build something, there's a workaround. Once you detect the workaround, I mean, the way that individuals, particularly criminal elements, are able to adapt is pretty quick.
They're making money. They're going to do it. Yeah, listen, exactly. I'm watching the clock, and I didn't want to interrupt you because this is the first time we've had to talk. And I'd like to have you back on to continue the conversation. And I appreciate you joining us this morning. We're keeping an eye on what's going on up there. Congressman Abigail Spanberger, the Democrat who now represents the 7th District, we appreciate you joining us here on the air this morning. Thanks.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate
it. Yes, ma'am.